You're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
Round two of the NBA playoffs off and rolling. Yesterday we had a phenomenal game one in the Eastern Conference. Pacers taking game one, going on a nice little run to close things out. 121-112 win over the Cavaliers. Also last night, the Golden State Warriors advanced to the second round. They knock off the Houston Rockets 103-89. We're going to talk about that. Also some news coming out of the Utah landscape. All that and more coming up right now with our guy, James Holis. He's our NBA analyst, taking out the time to join us once again. James, always a pleasure to get you on as we kick off a brand new week of playoff basketball.
Always a pleasure to come on, and we got to both make sure we say it. Long live El Jefe. Respect to Pop, who stepped down in San Antonio, and it's good to see the San Antonio legacy still moving on. He's moving to the front office.
Yeah, and I don't know what kind of role he's really going to have in the front office. I don't know what Pop's is capable of doing at this point in time, not only in his career, but his life. Like, I don't know the physical state that Pop is in. Regardless, for San Antonio to give this guy, who is a legacy, there's no question about it, he's one of the greatest of all time, to make sure that he still has a role within the organization, it's class all the way. And James, I've said this for years here on the show. If you could just look at an organization and say, this is the way we want our franchise to run, I think you would pinpoint the San Antonio Spurs, because really, over the last 25 years, they have gone through many peaks and valleys, but for the most part, they've been very consistent. And now you take a look at the future of this franchise, and it's in a good spot. This is a class act organization. I don't think there's any question about it.
No question. And I did see a bit of the press conference they did when he presented the El Jefe t-shirt and was announcing his stepping down. And it's bittersweet, because I remember Pop when he first got hired. And we watched him be, you know, irascible on the sidelines, and he was so vibrant and energetic and passionate. And you know, the elements have taken something out of him, you know, and as it will be. It's been 20 something years, so it's bittersweet, because we love to see him embraced by his former players and embraced by the NBA in general and fandom in general. But you know, time can be cruel. So.
It's one of those deals where, and look, we can speak to it here in the state of Utah. The day Jerry Sloan stepped away from the Utah Jazz organization, there was a dark cloud around the state and its basketball fans. I remember we had callers that were livid. We had callers that were sad. I didn't have any callers that were happy. It was a very, very difficult day here in the state of Utah. And we're not talking about a coach that won 5 NBA championships. We were talking about a coach that was a pillar of consistency for a franchise that always had them in contention. Pops took it to another level. Not taking anything away from Jerry Sloan. I'm saying that the comparisons are there, right? When you have a legacy coach that steps away, it's sad to turn the chapter. That's just the way it goes.
For sure. And at least with Pop, I think it played out to its entirety. While I remember the Jerry Sloan saga, and you know, that was kind of contentious, and
it was.
It wasn't like a pleasant situation, you know, as far as the whole situation. I remember Deron Williams and all that. So, but in this case, this was more, I think, you know, things happened out of everyone's control, and now we are where we are with Pop. And it's, again, it's bittersweet, but it's also, you know, time waits for no man.
Pop's no longer the head coach in San Antonio. Kind of the complete opposite deal coming out of Utah earlier today. The Jazz and Will Hardy agree to a multi-year extension. It's going to keep him on the Jazz bench till at least 2031. James, I was happy to see this. And Will Hardy, of course, with you being a Celtics guy, that's where he was brought up, right? He's got Celtic roots. The idea that the Jazz organization is willing to stick this out with a young coach through a rebuilding phase is so refreshing in a world where we just saw a coach who won an NBA championship 2 years ago get ousted, right? In the same NBA where a team that was above 500 past the trade deadline let go of a coach in Taylor Jenkins. When you look at the way the coaching saga and the carousel goes in the NBA today, to have an owner like Ryan Smith come out and say, Will Hardy's our guy through thick and thin, it was refreshing, and I think people in Utah should be happy about that.
Yeah, absolutely. He definitely deserves it. And coaching in the NBA, we know, is a very fickle business, a lot like being a star player, right? Star players, when they're on the come up, they basically do no wrong, right? Because they're not playing for anything. They're just building. They're cutting their teeth. They're developing their chops. And so we love to watch that. But once players get to a certain level, then all of a sudden the critiques become way different. And that's, I think, the same thing with coaching. We know Hardy's a good coach. He's proven it time and time again. I think just watching the way that the Jazz play, they run a lot of sophisticated, smart sets. They do a lot of smart things. He's instilling the right things. They don't have enough talent. And that's what you want. You want a forward-thinking, young, energetic, kind of charismatic coach to kind of lead your team. He fits the bill. And hopefully he will make it to 2031 and beyond, right? That's what you want. You want a legacy coach to sit in. But like you just said, Mike Malone did. That's what he did in Denver, and he did everything right. He won a championship, and less than 2 years later, he's gone, which is absolute insanity when you think about it. You know, it's when things start going bad for a good team, first person to go is the coach. Utah will be a good team one day, and it remains to be seen. What Hardy's going to take them.
Let's move on and talk about the playoffs and the way things are shaping out. We did have Game 7 last night, and you were very high on the Houston Rockets. You had every right to be. We were back and forth on this really throughout the entire first round of who's going to come out of the series. I like Golden State. I thought they would take care of business in six. To my surprise, Houston fires back. They take it into a Game 7. And it wasn't Steph Curry. It wasn't Jimmy Butler. It was Buddy Hield that proved to be the difference in this game. And I think when you take a look at it, you pointed this out on Twitter last night, the idea that the moment just seemed to be a tad bit too bright, right, too big for this young Houston Rocket team against a very savvy veteran squad in Golden State in Game 7. Not an ideal matchup when you go into the final game.
Yeah, and I mean, it's a hill that I'm dead on, right, because the Rockets lost. So I'll die on this hill that the Rockets physically on paper would have been the quote-unquote better team. When they played fast, they made a nice little comeback in the second half. I think they went on like a 14-4 run. When they just played fast and kind of played, you know, went to their strengths, which is athleticism and speed, they were blown by and running around the Golden State Warriors. But the Warriors did an amazing job of kind of mucking it up. And I'm going to say the Rockets got in their own way. I saw when the game kicked off, the very first two plays, they try to run a direct post-up of Sengun guarded by Draymond while everyone sit around and watch. And Sengun dribbled the air out of the ball and threw up a bad shot. And, like, I don't know if that was Ime trying to say, all right, we're gonna you know, play smash mouth and go right against your strongest thing. Well, if that was the case, it failed. But then I saw Van Vliet, who was excellent the three games prior. He started playing kind of hero ball. And you saw Sengun get frustrated. So they came kind of frazzled and undone. And in a game like that, Game 7, where the margins matter, you just can't do that, right? Every possession matters. And they just frittered away too many possessions.
Jalen Green and the offensive struggles is what stands out to me most in this series. And I think it's going to be a topic of discussion once we get into the offseason, when we look at how Houston can improve this team moving forward, because they're there. They're obviously on the cusp, right? But outside of Game 2, where he went off for 38 points, Golden State did a terrific job in this series of really limiting Green. I don't believe he had one game where he had 12 points. That was his second highest here in this series. And that was a problem for Houston.
Absolutely. I think I saw a graphic that said other than the 38, he averaged like less than 10 points a game. It was like 9.7. And he shot atrociously. Even this game, I think I grabbed my head and I yelled because he was trying to take Draymond off the dribble and do a cutesy little offhand, goofy-footed layup that Draymond just smacked against the backboard. Like, this is the big league. This is the big time. This is not the time to get cute. And he tried to get way too cute. It felt like he had no go-to moves. He was out there just, you know, almost playing like pickup ball. Yeah, and if you're a team trying to take that next level between him and then, Van Vliet being a shaky decision maker and being undersized and being streaky, you got to upgrade the perimeter, right? I think we all agree Amen Thompson is rock solid. Sengun is definitely a player that, you know, he was kind of like the backbone of a lot of what they did. They got to upgrade around those two and to take that next level. The front office likes to spend money. Let's see what they do.
I think it's one of the most curious cases going into the offseason. I mean, obviously the Lakers with Luka and LeBron, I mean, that's going to be center stage. But when you take a look at a team that is this young with an established head coach that makes this kind of leap in the Western Conference, improving this roster, to me it's one of the top stories of the offseason.
It can be, but I also hope that it could things as recent history to look at to be a cautionary tale where a team might exceed expectation and ownership decides, heck, we're ahead of schedule. Let's stomp on the gas and, you know, maybe try to go all in right now. But like anything, let's say a great cook, right? No matter what, the time the cake might look amazing, but it takes that time to bake. It takes the time it takes. Don't try to rush it. Hopefully they definitely need to upgrade the backcourt. They need more shooting. But other than that, they're kind of set. So slow and steady wins the race. They got time. I think Jalen's an asset that they can move. I don't think he should be part of the long-term future, Jalen Green. This is what, year three or four for him. So I'm not saying he is a fully formed guy, but if you're trying to win, I don't think he's that guy. But they're definitely close. They need a talent upgrade on that roster a little bit.
Let's talk about the team that did get the win in Golden State. They got to go up against Minnesota, who just steamrolled LA in five games. What's the ceiling in your mind for this Warriors team?
I got to begrudgingly tip my hat to Golden State, right? As the team that beat the Celtics a couple years ago, I always pull against them. But they pulled it out, man. That the vet know-how, it was gutsy, it was gritty. They got a contribution from a guy like Buddy Hield in the biggest spot. You tip your cap because they found a way to get it done. Now, they went seven with a younger, inexperienced Rockets team, and they looked offensively inept for large parts of this series. Minnesota Timberwolves, I think, are like almost a grown-up version of the Rockets, where they are more secure in their defensive identity. They have a better offensive creator at the top there in Anthony Edwards. Do they have the secondary pieces? I think Julius Randle might have a little confidence boost after the way he performed against the Lakers. So I'm curious to see, because I think that, sure, Golden State might get past this team, but with the older team, with Steph Curry and Draymond, you can't keep going seven. And I think this will be a tough series with the Timberwolves. I think I'm going to go Timberwolves in six with this one. But if it's Warriors in six or seven, you're starting to stretch it a little bit. And then they're having to face the OKC Thunder, which everybody thinks they probably will be. I think that's a wrap. So I'm going to say the ceiling for the Golden State Warriors should be the Western Conference Finals, but my fingers are crossed the Timberwolves send him home in the second round.
James Holis again joining us right now as we talk about the NBA playoffs. I want to let the listeners know that last week when James and I hop off the air, we were talking about the Pacers and the Cavaliers. And James said, I got a feeling Indiana can win this series. Game one, Indiana, they believe they can win this series as well, James. I mean, they put together a brilliant run to close out that game. They made Donovan Mitchell exactly what we saw in Utah for many, many years, and that's a volume scorer, a volume shooter. Anytime you make Donovan Mitchell that type of guy, where I think he went 1 of 11 from downtown, you have some problems. What did the Pacers do in game one that stood out to you as a, I told you so, I told you this was going to happen?
You know what? They just leaned into their own identity. Cleveland has done a great job of just playing their own game all season. And, of course, against the lowly Miami Heat, they just played their regular game, and they blew doors off guys all season. Well, I don't think a lot of people paid attention, but the second half of the season, I looked this up. Cleveland went like 31-8 down the stretch. Well, guess what? 28-8 were the Indiana Pacers, right behind them. Their offense rating was very close. I think they might have been a little bit behind them defense. But the point is, they won at a tremendous rate at the second half of the season, and they play a unique brand of basketball, which it's a lot like maybe we saw from Memphis, where it's not just screen and roll up top. The ball moves, the players move. It's a super high intense pace that, I mean, early on, it looked like Cleveland wasn't ready for it. They caught Cleveland unaware several times with timely skip passes or quick hitting offense early in the clock. So they just kept the pressure offensively on Cleveland, and Cleveland's defense, a lot of people didn't notice this, their defense kind of wavered down the stretch. I want to say they ended like the second half of the season, the Cleveland defense was like 10th or 13th in the league. So the Darius Garland injury is also another thing that pops up that we didn't expect. And now I'm hearing Evan Mobley might be injured. So this series is definitely up for grabs.
Outside of this series, we do have another important game to talk, a couple of important games to talk about tonight. Game one, we get the Knicks-Celtics. We also get the Nuggets-Thunder. We'll start by talking about your Celtics. I don't believe that this is even a test for Boston. I think it's a quick series. I'm going to say the Celtics get them out in five based off of pure boredom. I think if Boston wanted to, they could sweep New York. I was surprised the Knicks got out of the first round against the Pistons. I did not like New York in that seven-game set. I thought the youth of the Pistons really shined through. That's why New York was fortunate to get out of that series. Not going to be the case in this one. Plus, you know, I have home court advantage. You got to go on the road to Boston. I think it's a quick series, James.
You know what? My only bit of pessimism is when 100% of everyone is saying the same thing, it kind of makes me pause and wonder what can go wrong the other way. And literally everyone from Knicks fans and bloggers, well, not Knicks fans, Knicks bloggers and podcasters are saying the exact same thing. We'll be happy if we win two games against the Celtics. So it almost makes you think that the basketball gods might have something coming up with their sleeves. But, yes, on paper, you know, Boston beat New York I think New York might have won that last game or something. But either way, Boston handled them pretty well in the regular season. The Knicks don't seem to have the defensive discipline. They don't have enough firepower outside of Cat and, of course, Brunson. No one else can seem to be consistently, score more than 12, 15 points a game. We know that Tatum and Brown have been overwhelming. By all metrics, this should be a pretty easy Boston win, especially after the tough first-round matchup that you have with Orlando. It's going to be kind of like being unshackled. But let's see. Let's see. I hope that Boston can just follow the script and get this out, get this done in five or six games.
You feel the same way about the Thunder Nuggets?
I do. Again, the Nuggets just had a really tough first-round series. We know they're not very deep. We know that outside of Joker, Aaron Gordon, and Jamal Murray, it's a trick-or-treat batch of guys they have. We know that their defense can slip and they let guys get loose. We know that the Thunder are an absolute buzzsaw, and you know that first round matchup they just had. You know they Shea didn't even play great for half the games, and they just thoroughly dismantled the other team, and they've been doing it all year. So I think that that should be a short series, but if Denver steals one of the first two and Jamal Murray looks like Bubble Jamal again, then all of a sudden we're talking, because the best player in that series, I'm going to say it, is still Joker.
100%. 100%. And to go back to my logic, Game 7, I keep it very simple. If you get to a Game 7, give me the team that has the best player in that series. And you and I talked about this last week with Houston and Golden State. If it gets to Game 7, not only do the Warriors have the best player in that series, they got the two best players in that series in Steph Curry and Jimmy Butler. And oddly enough, it was Buddy Hield, right, that just blasted Houston right out of the gate. But I think that's the logic that you have to apply to a Game 7 in the NBA. So if Denver's fortunate enough to get this to seven games, it'd be intriguing to see. It'd be interesting.
It would be. My thing with the Thunder is that the Thunder do a great job defensively. They're so disciplined with their rotations and their closeouts. It's all textbook that. I don't know if any of the Nuggets' peripheral guys, be it Christian Brown, Peyton Watson, are they really going to be able to really have a Buddy Hield type impact game, right? And that's what they're going to need. They're going to need somebody to step up besides, the top three. Can Michael Porter Jr. average 25 a game? I doubt it. And against that kind of the defensive pressure of the Thunder, he's not the most durable kind of guy. And I just think the Thunder are going to kind of overwhelm them, right? Even in the playoffs now, they're going to still go 7-8 deep and maybe 9 deep. And they're tough. They're really tough.
So let me get this straight. You're going to go with the Celtics, Pacers, and then you're going to go Timberwolves, Thunder? Is that your final four?
I'll be gutsy. I think Cleveland still pulls this out. I don't know. I think
you're pretty high on Indy, man. You're pretty high on the Pacers.
I just knew it wouldn't be an easy win.
Yeah.
I think it might be just a 7-game series. And you're right. You know what? Let me just lean into it. Now we see the injury things too. I will. I'll say Pacers in six. Pacers in six, and I'm going with the Thunder. Yep.
And then you're taking Minnesota over Golden State.
I am taking Minnesota over Golden State, and I'm taking the Celtics, and I'll be nice and say six.
And you'll be hanging another banner relatively soon. Countdown's on.
I don't know, man. The Thunder are tough. Maybe I'm giving these other teams too much respect, but Thunder are tough.
He's James Holis, kind enough to join us each week to talk NBA basketball. James, before I let you go, let me know where we can find more of you.
You can find me over on formerly known as Twitter, and I need to get better where the sky is blue. I just talk basketball and life, especially now the playoffs are here. I'm all in. I'm locked in. So at Snotty Drippin, homage to the great Scottie Pippen. You guys, please come talk to me, find me, talk some basketball, and we'll have fun.
Looking forward to doing it again later this week. James, we'll catch up, say, Thursday or Friday. How's that sound?
You are the man, man. Just let me know. I'm happy to hop on.
And with that, we are out of time on this edition of Drive Time Sports. Always fun to be along with you on the afternoon drive. Don't forget, you can listen to the show on demand. Just head on over to CastleCountryRadio.com. We'll see you tomorrow. Same time, same place. Be safe. I am out.